So I go to BillWhittle.com this morning, and each day I go there to see the new material that Bill has produced, his firewall episodes, his time over target, his Nexus report, and there's a lot of other stuff in the archives, the old Trifecta episodes from PJ TV and Afterburners that Bill did, the Stratosphere Lounge, the Singularity, Mr. Virtual President, just some great stuff at BillWhittle.com. And I go there this morning, and I click on that little side margin thing, and it pops out, and what do my wondering eyes appear? But Right Angle, the new show that Bill Whittle, Stephen Green, and Scott Ott, that's me, are producing now at BillWhittle.com. You can see a lot of the episodes on Bill Whittle's YouTube channel or Scott Ott's YouTube channel, or you can go to ScottOtt.tv and click the Right Angle link, and you will see the archives of the YouTube episodes. But what you can't see are the members-only episodes. Those are reserved for, guess what? Members only. So, if you go to BillWhittle.com right now, join, pay that monthly fee of only $9.95, and you become a member and have access to the entire repository of members-only content, including brand-new members-only Right Angle episodes. BillWhittle.com is a sponsor of Scott Ott Podcast, which is coming up very soon. Just hang in there, okay? Are you frustrated by your efforts to debate, defeat, and destroy your ideological rivals? Would you like to win some? On episode 47 of Scott Ott Podcast, we take a look at the ultimate idea behind our conservatism, the pursuit of happiness. My buddy Mark Patton says this, based on how your career, meaning Scott Ott's career, evolved. He knows I don't believe in evolution. Anyway, based on how your career, Scott, evolved as a local elected official, author, blogger, and pundit, what would you consider the need or audience for a similar voice from the business world? Would people listen to someone discussing business management issues, not economics, in the context of conservative ethics and philosophy? I actually think that this is a great idea, and I think I'll steal it, Mark, because you probably aren't ready to go, and I am, so see you later. No, I think this is a terrific idea, and certainly in the course of my show, we have dealt with some issues involving business, and some get to the larger, more macro things like economics, but let me say it this way. Mark Patton's question is terrific, because what we need to learn about how to communicate with people and how to reach people with our ideas and values and principles is that 95% of people don't really give a flying rip about politics. It's probably not 95%, but you look at these primaries where they say the entire nation is all wound up about these elections, right? What's the average voter turnout in some of these states? You know, they ran out of ballots in Dallas during the Texas primary in some of these precincts, and the turnout was like 14 or 15%. So 85% of the registered voters, now we're not talking about the whole populace, just the registered voters, didn't even show up. And my point is that Mark Patton's question is great. Would people be interested in hearing a business or management perspective that comes from that worldview of conservatism and those kinds of values and principles? Absolutely, yes. But the thing is, I don't think, Mark, that when we do something like this, we should couch it in political terms, because most people don't care about politics. They care about how they're going to be able to live their lives. They're, as I've often said, they're worried about getting their kid to soccer practice and are they going to be able to get the groceries they want this week? Can anybody afford a night out for dinner? Can we go to this movie? How are things going at work? Is our company going to go out of business? Could we lose our job? I mean, those are significant issues for people. Most people are not sitting around going, you know how many delegates Bernie Sanders got in Indiana? Who cares? So, I mean, I care, but most people don't. And I used to tell people this when I was running for office. I said, don't mistake our enthusiasm sort of inside our little beltway, inside baseball conversations, as being what preoccupies most people most of the time. You know, I have close friends who contact me on election day and go, hey, who should I vote for? Because they haven't paid attention really at all. I mean, politics has been an intrusion in their lives, not the heart of the matter, not the core of things. Mark Patton's question saying, would there be a market for business and management stuff from a conservative perspective? And I would say, do it. but don't talk about where you're coming from. You know what I'm saying? Don't make a big deal. Just what was the used to say to us in script writing class? I had a screenwriting class in college, and they used to say, show it, don't say it. And basically that was to avoid us doing what's known in the movie business, in the script writing business, as on-the-nose dialogue. On-the-nose dialogue means that the actors are saying things that they could be doing or are doing. So, you know, instead of, a gentle touch on somebody's hand, the actor has to say, you know, I'm touching your hand because I feel affection toward you. You know, I'm being facetious about that. But that's not how you connect with people. And so what I would say, Mark Patton, is go ahead and do your blog or your videos or your books or whatever, talking about business and management. But what people want is how to run their business better. And they really, they don't think like we do sometimes. They don't say, hey, I think I want to develop a worldview and then see how that plays out. I think what they usually do is say, how can I make my business more successful? And you say, have you tried this? And they go, oh, that's great. What worldview does that come from? No, they don't care what worldview it comes from. They don't care about your ideology. They don't care about your politics. They want to be successful. Now, some of you will say, oh, well, you know, people should care about politics. They should pay attention to that. And you could should all you want, but they're not going to unless there's a compelling reason for them to do so. And that compelling reason actually comes down the line. It's kind of like Andrew Breitbart, I believe, used to make a big deal. I don't know if he originally said this, but he used to say that, look, politics is downstream from culture. You change the culture, the politics change themselves. But we're going at it the wrong way. We go all the way downstream and we're trying to change the spring from the ocean instead of starting at the spring where it's just coming up out of the ground. And so, Mark, take your worldview, bring your whole ideological framework and your principled framework to the task of business management. But your primary focus is to help people pursue their happiness by running a successful business. I hope that makes sense, because to me, this is so important to our whole enterprise. And it sounds funny coming from me, because I've just spent the last 8 years talking about politics, but I'm talking to a very small subset of people. And what I'm hoping is some of those people, like Mark Patton, will go out there and say, okay, how does my belief system play out in business? Am I being consistent or am I being hypocritical? And can I coach other people and help other people to be more successful? Because really, you know, there's an old saying that says, methods are many, principles are few, methods always change, principles never do. I heard that from Rick Warren, the pastor of Saddleback Church in California, years ago on an audio tape. He probably didn't make up that quote. In fact, I also heard from Rick Warren that he said, when you first use what somebody says, when you quote somebody, you should say, Rick Warren says. The second time you use that quote, you should say, I've heard it said, and then deliver the quote. The third time and thereafter, when you use somebody else's material, you should say, you know, I've always thought that. So I am still giving attribution to Rick Warren, because I remember when he said, methods are many, principles are few, methods never change, principles always do. So what I'm saying is, and this is a lesson, by the way, for Christian filmmakers and for Christian authors. Don't hit us over the head with it. Don't be like those first movies from that church in Georgia where, you know, what was it, Facing the Giants, which got, you know, it was a charming enough movie and they're nice people making the movie and the story was interesting, but it was too facile. And it got to the end and every single prayer that this guy had got answered magnificently and in ways that were sweet to him. Well, my experience in life has been that A, I don't always notice that every single prayer gets answered. B, not every prayer gets answered the way I would have had it work out. There's something called the sovereignty of God, and the wisdom of God, you know, is foolishness to men sometimes, but we are the foolish ones. And so it was too easy. And at the end, they were making all kinds of bald jokes about this guy during the course of the movie, but at the end of Facing the Giants, at one point, he's just overwhelmed with emotion because God has answered his prayer, and he's giving thanks to God, and he puts his head down with his hands like up around his head, like on his balding head, and kind of rubs his hands across his head. And in my view, to really put the icing on the cake for this entire on-the-nose movie, hair should have just sprung from his head. A huge afro should have blossomed from his balding scalp so that every single thing that was wrong in his life could go right. When people see that in a movie, they go, that's not real. That's not how things work. You know, it's just not the way it is. I saw an interview this week between Bono, the lead singer from U2, and Eugene Peterson, who's a Christian author and probably a pastor. Eugene Peterson is best known for having written the translation of the Bible called The Message. And the objective of writing The Message, that translation, was to try to convey not just the word-for-word translation like an English Standard Version does, for example, and not just be poetic with the language like the King James Version does, and not be sort of a paraphrase capturing the ideas the way the NIV does and some of the other sort of lesser translations, but to actually capture the spirit of the original languages, which is difficult, obviously, to do. And so, you know, he would flesh things out, Eugene Peterson did, in this book called The Message. So anyway, Eugene Peterson sits down. He's a very old man. Sits down with Bono, and Bono is talking to him. Now, Bono is a professing believer in Jesus Christ and a big rock star. He has been for decades with this band U2. And Bono said at one point during this chat at Eugene Peterson's house, he said, you know, Christians should be honest. Like, a lot of our songs are not honest. Like, where are the Christians who are writing songs for singing in church where you're talking about how awful things are going in your marriage, or how you lack faith, or how you struggle with temptations, or how you... Now, there's some of that already, but his point was well made, because he was basically saying Christian music tends to be on the nose. It's a sitcom where everything is solved in 22 minutes or less in the case of Christian songs. And so if we are genuine about our faith and our worldview, it should shape how we do everything around us. And so Mark Patton's question about should people who are conservatives, in this case, and I'm just making the analogy with Christianity, but should people who are conservatives weave that into books and stories and movies and speeches and poems and dances and songs and everything else that convey that worldview? Yes. But don't be too on the nose about it. Don't feel like you have to deliver 3 points in a poem in a PowerPoint presentation. Don't feel like you have to nail down and tack down every loose end. Let people explore. Let them struggle. Let them think. Let them try for themselves. There was a great preaching professor, I think he was a professor from Princeton Theological Seminary, and he came and spoke to us when I was going to Midwestern Seminary out in North Kansas City, Missouri. And he said what he likes to do from time to time is finish his sermon by throwing out some difficult problem and then just turning and walking off stage and leaving it with the people and the Spirit of God and the Scriptures. And he wants people to come up to him and go, hey, 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 whoa, I'm really struggling with it. That really messed with my head. What's going on there? When we're too sophomoric about our messaging, when we're too sophomoric and infantile and facile and I don't know how else to describe this, people don't trust us. People don't think it can be that easy. People don't think that there's a pat answer for everything. And there really isn't. You know, when it comes down to it, most of the sermons I've ever heard in my life end with, you know, pray, read your Bible, go to church, serve people. But Christianity is not a do religion. It's a done religion. Jesus said it is finished. The atonement was accomplished on the cross. By faith alone, you are saved. You get eternal life and forgiveness by merely trusting in Jesus, and even that, the will that it takes to repent and have faith comes from God. And so it is not a matter of performance and everything's going to be okay. We don't have a little sort of syllogism religion that says if this, then that. We have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And when you're talking about conservative principles, when you're talking about the worldview that we espouse, ultimately, when it comes right down to it, our worldview in conservatism, if you want to call it that, and I'm reluctant to give myself that label because it brings in a bunch of other things like that I don't necessarily agree with, but that worldview is ultimately, the end of that is happiness, is your right to pursue happiness. It doesn't guarantee happiness. It doesn't grant you happiness, but a conservative worldview is ultimately aimed at a government that creates an atmosphere that at the very least does not interfere with your pursuit of happiness. And I would say at the very most, it doesn't interfere with your pursuit of happiness. That's it. And so here we are. We are conservatives. I am. I don't know about you. And our objective in this life is not to beat people over the head with the enumerated powers and the separation of powers and the, you know, all this constitutional talk. Our objective is that people would be able to pursue their own happiness. All we want is to have a government that doesn't interfere with that. It's not, and this is the trouble, because if you're a progressive, if you're a liberal, what you're thinking is, I want to use government as a tool to improve your life. And if that means a certain loss of liberty, well, that's okay, because your life will be better. But if not your life, somebody's life will be better. Maybe from the cash in your pocket, somebody else's life will be better. And that is a very proactive, goal-oriented, I've got a purpose for government, and government is to make your life better, and we're going to do things for you. It's like when President Obama was talking before he was elected the first time in that old interview where he said that the problem with the Constitution is that it's a charter of negative liberties. It just talks about what government can't do. It doesn't talk about what government can do to make your life better. So we've got two opposing worldviews, the progressive, liberal, democratic worldview that says we want to fashion government in a way that'll do things for you so that your life will get better. And then we have the conservative worldview that says the natural state of man is to pursue happiness. The natural state of man is liberty under God with responsibility. And that natural state, when government comes in, is bound to lose. Because the natural condition of man is also that man is a sinful creature and he desires to exert his will on other people. And if you give him a gun, if you give him the power of taxation, if you give him the power to regulate or to abscond with your property, he will do that. He will come together in small bands to take your property, to take your life, to restrain your liberty. And we want a government that is less powerful, which is why it's so hard to run for president of the United States. This is one of my objections to Donald Trump's candidacy, is this is a guy who loves power. I don't want a guy who loves power in the White House. I want a guy who wants to go to the White House and strip the executive branch of power to bring it back, as Ted Cruz used to say, you know, I want a government so small that it fits within the Constitution. That's what I'm looking for. And that's a tough sell, because I'm not trying to tell you, hey, vote for me and I'll get you what you want. What we're saying is, vote for me. I mean, if we do this right, as constitutionalists, as conservatives, as liberty lovers, we say, vote for me, and I'll try to stay out of your way. I mean, I don't want to interfere with your life. I don't want to mess with your plans to pursue happiness. I would like to be the smallest obstacle possible to that in order to facilitate a society in which people aren't killing each other and cheating each other And if they are killing each other and cheating each other, there is a system of justice that will deal with that. Now you think, well, how did Mark Patton's little question about whether or not he should, I assume he meant himself, whether or not he should pursue creating a blog or a book or videos or something like that about business and management, how did that all lead to that? I am just doing here. I'm laying the philosophical groundwork for something, Mark. And for anybody else who's thinking about stuff like this, I'm laying the philosophical groundwork for what you should do. Your book, your blog post shouldn't have any of that stuff in it. You shouldn't talk about the philosophical underpinnings of it. You should just talk about good management. If you're a school teacher, can you teach from a conservative perspective? You absolutely can, but it doesn't happen by giving lectures on conservatism. It doesn't happen by getting up and bashing progressive and liberalism. It happens, number one, by you pursuing your own happiness. Number two, by you allowing your students as much as is possible in a classroom setting to pursue their own happiness or to help them to define happiness in ways that are fruitful for them in the long run. And number three, to teach them how the United States of America is the cradle of happy opportunity. That's how that flows out of you. And you don't have to spend a lot of time drilling people on principles. The principles will come later, and they'll begin to start to, you know, it happened with me. My life started to change in many ways by listening to Rush Limbaugh on the radio, and he was funny, and he was entertaining, and after a while, I realized that I was starting to pick up things just by the way he approached life, the way he approached news, and I began sort of adopting some of his views without really consciously thinking about it. And there are other things that happen when you watch movies, when you listen to music. You start to adopt worldview, and aspects of worldviews and elements of worldviews that you're not even consciously aware of. So that's what I want you to do. I want you to go out and teach school from a conservative perspective, pursuing joy, happiness, learning, showing boys and girls the thrill of learning new information and how you can apply that to your life in pursuit of your goal, your dream. That is much more useful than what I'm doing. Because I am, you know, as it says on one of my profiles, I think on my Facebook thing, it says I'm a yapper and a scribbler. And many ways, that's what I am. I'm a yapper and a scribbler. I write things and I talk about things. But you're a doer. You are changing the world. There was a mom on Facebook the other day who said that she was seeing Facebook posts from her friends. I would drop her name right now, but I don't have her permission to do so. But she was seeing Facebook posts from her friends, and they were all saying, oh, well, I was on thus and such a show on TV or radio and talking about the election, and I was quoted in this newspaper or that website and talking about politics and all that kind of stuff. And then she said that she had to go to the grocery store and that she had to go buy like upholstery to redo some chairs that her children had peed on. And I thought, you know what? I know who's doing the important work there. It's the woman who's reupholstering the chair that her kids had peed on. It's the woman who's pouring out her life for these children. They're America, not just of the future, but now. That is substantive, crucial, theological, philosophical, educational work. And it's a work of love and passion. And it should never be trifled with. That she brings her worldview to. She is raising up her children in the way they should go. And when they are old, as the scriptures say, they will not depart from it. Train a child up in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. There may come a time in the middle when he departs from it, but when he's old, he'll go back. He'll look to the trusted ways, to the reliable paths. And he'll realize, as I did, as we all do at a certain point, I think, wow, my parents were right. Why was I arguing with them all that time? You, where you are, have a vocation. That is a word that means a calling. I would contend it's a calling from God, even if you haven't recognized it as such yet. But you have a calling. That vocation means a calling. You are serving a purpose there. And it's not to go to work and get in political arguments with your colleagues. That's not the purpose. Or to go to work and to simmer and stew all day because you're trying to avoid political arguments with your colleagues. Or to go to work and be so irked and annoyed by your political colleague mouthing off about crazy progressive nonsense that you just can't have a happy day. That's not what it is. I really believe that your primary goal, and it's really hard for me to talk about this outside of the context of a relationship with Christ because that's just who I am and that's in me, but I'm gonna set that aside for a second. Your primary goal is that people would see that you're happy, that you, in general, deal with problems without freaking out, that you have found a way to have a family and a work life and have not, I don't believe in balance. I know things are always kind of swinging from one end of the spectrum to the other, but you have found a way to enjoy life that is healthy and that is long lasting and that is anchored. That's your job. Your job is to pursue happiness. I use this slogan all the time. It's on my logo. You'll see it at the beginning and the end of my show that says, live the freedom. That's your job. Your job isn't to beat somebody into submission to your perspective on what it takes to achieve freedom. Your job is to live it out. Whether you're in fat times or lean, whether you're in crisis or glorious blessing, whatever it is, people will be drawn to you if you are loving your life. Now, if your principles don't lead you to that conclusion, if you are living a life that's miserable and you're like, these people aren't conservative enough, I need to make them conservative, you're unhappy. Nobody wants to do that. You're not going to persuade anybody by shouting them down. I am definitely not a Bernie Sanders supporter. My daughter is definitely a Bernie Sanders supporter. But guess what? We love and respect each other. And I think that she's an intelligent person. And she thinks for herself. I think for myself. And I think that having a civil dialogue between two intelligent people who love and respect each other is much more fruitful than trying to bash people or making, you know, nasty remarks on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or YouTube or wherever you make nasty remarks. We have an opportunity to win people. There's a book that Arthur Brooks wrote from the American Enterprise Institute. Arthur Brooks wrote this book called The Conservative Heart. Highly recommend you read it. I'm going to do an interview with Grace at some point because I sent her a copy of the book and she read it and really liked it. And I interviewed Arthur Brooks. You can find this interview on my YouTube channel. Just look around, but or just go to YouTube and type in Scott Ott, Arthur Brooks, and you should find this interview I did with Arthur Brooks. Arthur Brooks has nailed it. He's an intellectual. He works for a think tank, but he understands that you need to build relationships with people. You need to connect with people, that people are not going to want something that appears to have made you miserable. You know, do you ever see somebody do this? It's kind of like they pick up something from their plate, they stick it in their mouth, they make a sour face, and they go, ugh, you want some? And they hold it out to you. I'm like, no, thanks. No. You made that face and now you think I'm going to want it? I don't want it. If it made you pucker like that, I don't want it. Well, sometimes I think people look at us and they say, oh, if you're Republican, libertarian, conservative, liberty lover, whatever you want to call yourself, they look at you and they say, hey, man, if you're sucking a lemon all the time, why do I want to be like you? That doesn't sound like any fun. That doesn't sound like it would be a pleasant existence. It sounds like you're miserable. What good is that? The pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. When Jefferson drafted the Declaration of Independence, he didn't author it, he drafted it. He kind of assembled it from pre-existing thinking and some of his own thinking and some of his colleagues' drafts of things and from the Virginia Declaration of Rights and other documents that were available. The common phraseology at the time was life, liberty, and property. And Jefferson changed it to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think that makes all the difference. Obviously, we want to be able to secure our property, and part of some people's happiness is in acquiring property. But the purpose of governance, the reason for which governments are instituted among men, drawing their just powers from the consent of the governed, is that we might pursue happiness. Oh, can you get a hold of this? Can you find it in your heart to say, you know what? That's what we're about. Am I angry about how the election is turning out? Probably a little. Am I disappointed? Yeah. Frustrated? Yeah. Confused? Sure. But ultimately, my joy cannot be stolen by the occupant of the White House. My joy cannot be stolen by the wrong person getting the Republican nomination for the presidency, because my joy is not founded on that. My joy is in Christ, but it plays out in many ways through my view of a civil society that's based on a firm understanding of human nature and on this precious idea of liberty, that we are here to pursue our own happiness. That fires me up. That's worth getting out of bed for. That's worth posting something on Facebook about. Frankly, a lot of the stuff, I just think, you know, what was the thing that Steve Martin used to do, this routine where he said he was playing the banjo, and he's a great banjo player. Steve Martin, the comedian, is a great banjo player. He's playing the banjo and he's going, you know, banjo is such a happy instrument. It's hard to play a sad song on the banjo. And he's like, doom-doom-doom-doom, plucking away at the banjo. And he goes, and he starts singing to this perky tune on the banjo. He's going, oh, death and grief and sorrow and murder. It's just hard to do. Well, by the same token, that kind of down-in-the-dumps doomsaying ought to be difficult for a conservative to maintain for very long. Because ultimately, we have a worldview that says, live the freedom, pursue your happiness. Don't let obstacles like human opinions or even elected officials get you down. Don't anchor your soul to the worst elements of society. Don't allow a perspective on something that you have today that may change tomorrow to drag you down. Focus on that pursuit of happiness. And I think when we do that, you know, there's an old saying that was attributed to John Wesley. I'm not sure if he said this or not, and I've quoted it before. But Wesley allegedly said, set yourself on fire with enthusiasm, and people will come from miles around just to watch you burn and to warm their hands by the fire. Now, obviously, that's metaphorical language for you literalists. But it's true. Don't you want to be around people who are happy? Don't you want to go, hey, why are you always so happy? When I first came to faith in Christ, I had people coming up to me, literally people who had known me for a long time, going, hey, what is this all about? They wanted to know because they could see it. They could see my perspective had changed. That's how you win people. That's how you form a movement. You do your vocation in a way that is emanating joy. You do your vocation in a way that's a blessing to other people. And let them come to you and try to find out why. You don't beat them over the head with your liturgy, with your literature, and with your ideology. You live the freedom and let them want it. I was in sales training with a guy who was making, I think at the time, around $4 million a year. And he would say, always remember, When you're in a sales presentation, when you are making a sales presentation, remember this, I've got the cookie. I've got the cookie. Don't be thinking that the customer has something that you have to get. Understand the value of what you have and hold the cookie out. And in so many words, say, I've got the cookie. In your mind, you know, you don't say that out loud, but inside you're saying, you know what? I've got something they need. That's the same thing when it comes to your faith in Christ. It's the same thing when it comes to your conservative ideology and your view of this world. I've got the cookie. People want cookies. But they need to see that I'm enjoying the cookie. We need to sort of, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can lead a horse to the trough, but you can't make him eat. But you can salt his oats so that he'll want some water. And by the same token, you can live a life that is salt and light before other people, that is a fragrant aroma that people say, I like that guy. I like that woman. What is it about her that is so appealing? Why is it that she seems to enjoy things? Even when things aren't going well, she seems to have an attitude, not a phoniness, not a fake, you know, fake it till you make it, but an attitude that is at peace. That says, you know what? Because I'm living my life by principles, I know that this too shall pass and that good things await. And I'm always living in eager expectation of that day. Episode 47 of Scott Ott Podcast includes audio excerpts from Scott Ott Show, originally streamed live on YouTube, Facebook, and Periscope, May 5th, 2016. For more information, visit ScottOttShow.com. Thank you for listening.